Welcome to another edition of Clan Chat Online. And there we go. All the happy faces are there, as you can see. Starting top left is Matt Haywood. Matt, how's your week been?
Yeah, good. Just trying to get prepared for this baby number two coming. So we've just been getting last minute things and getting stressed.
You're trying to get prepared. How long have you got? You've not got long to go. You can't get prepared now.
Well, I mean, like, hospital bag and stuff like that. You know, like, the last minute. We're prepared, but we're not Jenny prepared.
There's another level, I guess.
That was the voice of Jerry McLaughlin back for another stint. Jerry, how's your week going so far?
Amazing. The weather's been beautiful. You know, I've been outside. I've been soaked to death. Kids have been driving me mental. It's been good. It's been good.
Excellent. And of course, our guest of honour, bottom right-hand picture, as you can see, the former Clan coach between 2013 and 2017. Ryan Finnerty joins us. Ryan, good to have you on board and nice to have a guest who's in the same time slot as us this week as well.
I bet, eh? Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Yeah, finally got it done. So excited to be here, Craig.
Good stuff.
I like the way you've shut the curtains though, Finner, to pretend you are in a different time zone. Anyway, just to try and be exotic. That's it. You're stuck in the UK.
No nosy neighbours, man. They're always peeking in.
Good stuff. Usually we kind of ask the guest, who's usually another side of the pond, how coronavirus has affected things where they've been, but obviously you're only down the road in sort of Manchester area, so we've got a fair idea. But from a coaching point of view, how's your preparations been for the new season?
Pretty slow. obviously we've got guys signed. We've signed a few guys back from last year, but it's been a pretty slow process with everything going on. It's a little tough to recruit when the arenas aren't even open. You know, either way, I think we have what we said till December. So, you know, we're kind of taking our time and seeing what happens here. And I know I saw that North America just announced that they're trying to get going on December 4th, I think, both the A and East Coast League. So, you know, it's going to be a bit of a slow burn and, you know, hopefully we can get a major U-turn and start getting excited about the season.
Absolutely. But we've got you here, obviously, to look back in your time with the Clan. Four happy years. You're the only coach to have gone beyond a year. That must be quite unique from your point of view.
Where's my medal? Get a trophy.
Should we take this opportunity to announce you as the next Clan coach? That'll really set the cat amongst the pigeons.
Yeah. Wow, that's quite a stack.
Yeah.
When you think back, because before I got there, it was just like, how many were there? How many years?
There's four.
Well, Matt, you've been there for every year. How many people?
There's four in 3 years before you came.
Are you counting?
The thing is, Woody, what are you doing, Woody, to these coaches? Why are you so objectionable that every single coach has to leave?
I just give them horrible advice. I reach out and I just give them all the worst advice you could imagine, and they take it.
me and Jenny joke that Charlie's 3 years old, and this Clan coach coming will be a fifth Clan coach.
So that's how we age our kids now.
Because she had Finner, Tripper, Pete, Fitzy, and then now the new guy. Unless it's Finner again.
Yeah, but you don't have to rub it in. You don't have to start singing "Happy Fifth Coach to You" or anything. Too far.
That's how I just base all my life events on now. It's just Clan coaches.
I'm in chronological order. Yeah. I don't remember him in years. Just coaches.
2 years before Finner. That was 2 years before Finner, and it was the 2 years after.
EF and AF.
AF after Finity. Yeah.
So Ryan, four happy years with the Clan. What was your first impressions of the club when you were first approached and when you got the job?
My first impressions. Well, I came from Sheffield, and when we showed up, there was nothing. There wasn't an employee in sight. We were it. I think we got remind me now, like a Kirsty Longmire.
Yeah, Kirsty was
there. She'd handed her resignation in. So she was there for all of 48 hours when it was Bergie and I that showed up. Gareth wasn't on the scene. And Andy was like part-time I don't know, just floated in every now and again. Just came in and sat down. And so it was just kind of Bergie and I. That was it. That was all we had. So we kind of like, I didn't know the difference between Renfrew and Greenock to, you know, it was, yeah. We were just kind of like just thrown in the middle of the ocean, like, okay, welcome.
Was there anything left for in terms of like, here's how we did the housing previously, here's how we arranged it? Was there anything like that in place? Handover. Was there like, there's a few flats handed over?
I remember one of the nights, might have been like the first week, Bergie and I, and it was, we stayed at Tracy Ross's mother's house in Erskine?
Probably Erskine, yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Right, yeah, she was like, it was like she just opened her house up for Bergie and I just to have like a place. And then I remember we were going, they only had the office in the mall, the one you still have, but it's more like storage, I think, now.
Yeah.
The same one you have. That was like the main, you remember?
Yeah.
And all the pigeons and stuff and all the like were, like, it was, yeah.
I think the same pigeons are there.
Huh?
Yeah, the same pigeons are still there. They actually said to say hello.
Oh, I thought you said you can't say pigeons. But yeah, and then I remember we were just digging around the desk and then we found like an old like housing binder and then we just started making calls. And in fairness, so like Bergie was like, that was like Bergie's wet dream, man. He was like, he loved that stuff. He was 24/7, like there you couldn't find a better guy to work with. And he was just like gone, and he would walk in the middle of a meeting and interrupt it and be like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm Kevin Bergen. Like, he didn't give a about anybody. He just, if he was on a mission, it was getting done. So he was good. Maddie, you weren't even there. You were probably in back home. You weren't living.
Yeah, really.
There's nobody
there. Unless I was in Australia, yeah.
I think Bolton was the only one there. And he only said three words the whole year. So he wasn't a whole lot of help. But it was awesome. Like it was good. It's kind of like where I kind of found like a little bit of my passion for like the general manager side and all that stuff that sucks to do, but I actually really enjoyed it. And, you know, and then the housing got easier as I got more accustomed with where I am. And then, you know, we had a pretty good year that year. I don't think we're expected to do a whole lot. And we brought some pretty good players in and some idiots in but it managed to work out. It was a fun year. It was a kind of a learning experience for everybody. And then we just kind of, from there, we just kind of springboarded into the next year and so on.
See, we're at that point now, and I'm sure you'll agree with me on this, Jerry, you know, because Clan have had different coaches the last 3 years, we're crying out for that consistency. And I think that was something you definitely brought from your time, Ryan. Obviously having more than a year certainly helps. Matt, from a playing point of view, how much did that consistency help given the length of time Ryan was there for?
Yeah, obviously that's the key. I think look at the big teams in the league, they not only have the same coach, but they have the same core group of guys. Binner did that well. He kept obviously four or five guys from every season and moved on and improved every single year, I think. So, and then you get players like Scott Pitt who stayed for 9 years or whatever it is. So he obviously did something right.
So tell us about the core guys that you had, Ryan. What the qualities that they brought? You had Scott Arson, who obviously came with you in that first season. Matt Keith, I think, came later on. But Ed McGrain, Bergie, who you mentioned as well. You know, why were these guys that you could sort of hang your hat on?
Starting year one, like we had obviously Ash returned, mm-hmm. Ash Goldie. We brought RC in. I mean, and the biggest signing was the very last signing we made that year. And in like, you know, what you normally want to do is leave it your goalie to the end. Mm-hmm. Any good coach would tell you. We had the school spot. We only had one, and we got Jonesy, and more importantly, we got Heidi. And then, but what we didn't have was housing, and and they were married and just married, and nobody wants to. So I remember we were like, oh, Bergie and I are like, oh, how are we going to make this work? And then And then we had Shane Luss coming in, which we didn't know Shane Luss. He's like one of the greatest humans in the world, you know, like, you know, like, but you don't know that. You talk to the guy on the phone, you can do his, you know, you phone everybody. They're all telling you everybody's great. Nobody says a bad word about anybody anymore. It's terrible, you know?
Yeah.
And anyway, so they, we just talked to him. He said, okay, we ended up getting him a three
bed. Tracy's mom.
We got him a three bed just off the roundabout there. And what is it called? Where you used to live, Maddie. But Kenley Road.
Kenley Road.
And right. I remember I think I actually talked to Heidi. I'm like, you have your own bathroom. You're kind of on this wing of the house. It's like a horseshoe. And, you know, that douchebag will be over there. And I think he's a nice guy. Anyways, but they end up being like today, they're like best friends, Jonesy and Lusty. And like, I think Jonesy would have lived with Lusty if he came back the following year again. Yeah. Yeah. that was a win that could have gone the other way. A lot of players would just flat out refuse to not live with somebody. And yeah, so that worked out. And then he was, you know, he was awesome. He didn't have the best numbers, I don't think, that year. But I mean, we were also, you know, for the first half of the year, our first couple, we were treading water pretty good, but then we got going, and he was good. And then yeah, we had like a few guys. Maybe we had Caribou and Nathan Moon. Nathan Moon just came in for a conditioning skate and took off overnight.
That's right. He didn't last long. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a lesson learned.
I remember that guy.
Did he speak to you, Finno? Like when he left, or was he just gone? Like just gone.
He just like he's like I'm leaving. I think he. I don't even know if he flew me from the airport or the night before. and he's a nice kid. I mean, I still talk to Mooner every now and again. Like, but he was just a young kid who didn't know. Like, you know. But what happens when you do that is you burn your whole like your ITC card. Now you basically just get bad debt. You get bad credit, and that stays with you. And basically, somebody has to pay that credit. So when he wants to come back to Europe, all you have to do is hand 2 weeks in and say, hey, I'm leaving in 2 weeks. Give the team ample. You can't just leave and then just come back to another team. Then it just doesn't work like that, right? It could stop. That's what stops people from doing that. So, yeah. So then we had Caribou, which I knew when he showed up with he had like a Lululemon pink like hair net thing. And I knew right away, I'm like, this probably. I remember just looking at Birdie like, because this was Bernie's guy. I'm like, is this your guy? And he was like, oh, no. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. But then, yeah, he left. Or did he leave? Or did we? No, I think he left.
We all called him Lord Farquaad from Shrek.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a good shot, though. He could shoot the puck. I don't know if he was going to get 10 shots that year, but if he did, he could shoot the puck. But then, You know what the biggest thing that hurt us that year, remember, Maddie? And was it the week before playoffs, like the Final Four, or the week before playoffs, I think. Remember Cully? Remember how good Cully was?
Yeah. I forgot about Cully, actually.
Remember? And he came in, and he was a stud. Like, he was so good. Yeah. He gave us, like, depth and like, made us dangerous. And then him and McGrain, I think, ran into each other in practice, and he got a
concussion. Yeah.
That was it.
Oh my God!
Eddie McGrain was good too. I mean, he was.
Yeah.
He could have been a legend. Like if he would have played a couple more years, he still looks like he's 25 years old.
I got off the plane from Australia and he met me in the car park of the thing. And he's obviously, how old was Eddie? He was 39, 40, wasn't he? And
no, he was younger than you thought. He's 35, I think. And
he would have been 35. Yeah.
35. So he come up to me and he had like Justin Timberlake, NSYNC, Frosted Tips. And he's like, and I think I was talking to Eddie. I'm like, who's that guy? And he's like, Eddie McGrain. He's 30 odd. I'm like, 30 odd.
he had the pearly white teeth. He had the whitest teeth you could imagine.
He looked like,
right out of a Colgate commercial.
Yeah, he looked like he was a teenager trying to buy beer. You know, like me trying to work.
What was his Scottish connection as well? Was it his father? Was it his dad?
That played for Rangers or Celtic or something like that.
Yeah, he was a big football fan.
Yeah,
that'd be where all the money for the teeth came from.
Yeah, there was definitely a football connection with Eddie, because I remember interviewing him when he signed, and that came up in the interview about his love of football, and he wanted to go and see Rangers or Celtic or both or something at the time. And I can remember saying to him, well, if you're going to see one, you need to see the other one, you know, keep in with the fans, you know.
We had a blow up, didn't we, about that? Something happened.
Yeah, Fitzy situation, yeah.
That was a Fitzy, yeah.
Yeah, the Fitzy situation gets used now every year since an induction as an example.
He's part of the induction.
What not to do. Yeah, it's like the Fitzgerald saga. Fitzy was there, like, you know, this year, and he's like, yeah, this happened to me, and I had to start that and all. That's good. I didn't realize. I don't know. It's like, just go see them, but just don't tweet about it. Give yourself a favor.
It's
so
one
funny. That comes up every year. Like, guys, new imports come in, and they're like, oh, you know, I heard that Celtic Rangers game is really quite something. You're like, yeah, it's quite something. No, I heard it's really bad. And you're like, yeah, it's really bad. They love that. Like, it's that bit that they want to see. And you're like, go see it, man.
Well, they've got no idea. They don't have anything like that at all. No. They don't have any, like, they just have on-field rivalries, but it's never like, it's nothing like Celtic Rangers.
It's great, and like you do lead to them though. You're busy telling the guys about the rivalries in our league as well, though, and Flyers games and stuff, and what it means to the fan base and what have you. And it's a totally different ball game, obviously, than Celtic Rangers. But it's like, this is what's important to our fan base, you know. So that's all part of that bit now. So it's good to know where it started from.
Yeah, my memory's so bad. I'm actually pulling up our roster that year. Matty, you want to know how many points you had?
I'll probably say about 17.
Ah, 21, actually.
There you go.
I was injured for a bit. I did my shoulder, didn't I?
Right at the end, didn't you?
Yeah.
Because you were my coach in the... No, it was the next year in the championship.
Yeah, I did it that year, and I got surgery in the summer. But I remember that. I got hit from behind by the big guy in Edinburgh. I don't know his name. He was a coach.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Emerson. Riley Emerson.
And he popped back in, and then Jeff Smith came over and had a fight. So these 2 6-foot-8 giants are fighting right next to me. I'm laying on the floor and I'm trying to crawl.
And was that Emerson's first game as well? Was that his first game? Because I think he never seen
like
to Alistair.
Suspensions like back to back to back.
Yeah, I was late on. I think it was like. It was after Christmas, I'm sure.
I remember saying to Alistair, because Alistair was our cameraman at the time, and we were like down ringside, and I was like, I'm going to mention this guy in the preamble at the start, Riley Emerson. He's like, which guy is Riley Emerson? I was like, the guy that's stretching off on the plexiglass like it's a boxing ring. He's just like, just stretching off on this side of the ring, and the glass, the person is going, I can't believe you got hit by that, Woody. That's unbelievable.
From behind.
We forgot about Joel Champagne. He was freaking good,
he was,
too.
He was really good, yeah.
He's still
we had a big team. We had a top team, too. That was the year we had, obviously, Smithy and Frank.
No, that was the first year. We didn't have Smithy there. We had Frankie. That was like the Frankie Nickerson.
The next year we got. Okay.
Yeah, and then the following year is when we had
eight guys over 6'4".
Yeah, Tully did well. Tully scored a lot for us that year too.
Uh-huh.
You had a lot of skill in that team.
Yeah, we had
high skill team.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kenton Smith was there. He retired 5 times that year. Played for us. Trent, like 3 retirement practices for him.
Trenton Smith.
Yeah, Trenton Smythe.
so many great names. The first season, which we've kind of went into a lot, and that was the season, it was the playoff final weekend, Ryan. That was your first taste of that as a coach. Tell us about the build-up in the camp in that week after overcoming Nottingham in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, that was fun, obviously. Like, I remember going to Nottingham, Frankie's wife went into labor, so we didn't have Frankie going down. Did we have 5 or 6? We must have 6 deep.
I don't think me and Alcy played that.
And then Trimmer, I think Trimmer had like 3 goals or 2 goals, and it was three or four nothing, and then we came back.
Yeah, I think so.
But that was like the Nottingham, like they could always come back, you know, like they were always so, like, if there was a team in the league back then that could score 8 against you, it is Nottingham. So yeah, and then we just played really well. But like when we came back, I think we beat them again, like like 6-2 or 3 or something.
Yeah, like I think he scored first, yeah. Like 1-0 up, didn't they? And we were all like,
4-1. Everybody, we called a timeout at 18 minutes of the first. But yeah, no, it was fun. And then obviously, you know, we ran into Sheffield in the finals. And, you know, I think they beat us by a goal. But we were
2-2, I think, yeah. I think we deserved to win that game.
Yeah, well, we played really well, and then Mizey scored against us, right? Yeah, so it was good. It was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, for our first experience in Glasgow, and like, I think that at some point in that year, we were in first place. I think at Christmas time, it was like us in Belfast, and then that's when the crowds really started to grow. Like, I struggled to remember a crowd under 2,000, but I know we had a lot, and then it just kind of, it just crept up and up and up, and we just stayed in the fight, and then it just seemed to kind of take off towards the second half of the season for the fan base anyways.
Because I remember that, again, going back to the Panthers game, the playoff and the quarterfinal, I'd never heard noise like that in Brayhead Arena, having been involved with the club, obviously, prior to that. And I'm sure Matt will agree, even as a player, it was unlike anything else we'd ever experienced.
Probably would have been one of our first sold-out games, probably. Apart from obviously the 5 game and a couple of Belfast games, but yeah, well, it was the first time we ever had a chance of going through to the semi-finals there, so it was obviously great. And when that barn gets rocking, it's actually very, very fun to play in front of.
But what was it like? Because obviously, like, people always go on about Neil owning 2 clubs, and you know, and then when it comes to these crunch games, like, what was your memories of? Surely that kind of put it, well, I mean, it never really puts it to bed, but surely that was a big kind of, well, there you go. Like, if Neil really was, if there was any suspicion, if there's some conspiracy, then that would never happen. You know what I mean? Surely yeah. That, but going into that game, there must have been like, is it all going to get suddenly thrown away? Well, let's just see, shall we? And that still kind of comes up, doesn't it? When it suits people, it comes up, but it doesn't.
It's an easy argument to make, but I mean, I've been on both sides, and like, he could give two about whether it's a Nottingham Glasgow thing. It's like, this is Glasgow and that's Nottingham. There is no, there's never any, like, he separates it right down the middle. Like, he doesn't, there's no decisions yet made in Nottingham, but not, you know what I mean? Like, obviously the way he runs his business, I mean, they're a bigger machine than we are. So yeah, they have a bigger budget, but he doesn't say, I can't let you do this because I didn't let Corey do that. You know, there was never any of that. Like, it was just, this is your budget. He was a budget guy, and you stayed in it, and good luck. And that was it. Like, there, you know, and he always let us make moves, and he was always good. If you're in the hunt, he was always good. You know, if you were playing well, he was always good. If you were playing bad, like anything, you know, it was tough to get anything out of him, and you had to start playing good, you know, before you send that email or pick up the phone and ask for a favor. But yeah, no, but there is, like, he makes no decisions based on where or who's playing or, you know, and I don't even know half the time if he'd even know that they were playing or what. He's just so, he's got his Nottingham hat and then he's got his Glasgow hat. There is no in between. Like, it was
the big tester for that. There was a really interesting one in the last few years. Woody, do you remember with the ice, when the ice plant had the issue and we're playing against Nottingham, and Nottingham were not in Clam, were playing really well. Was this Pete's year, I guess? Then is that right?
The one that had to split the third period.
Yeah, and it was literally getting to the point where, like, you know, the goalie's there, like, trying to get down to the paint, and they're literally trying to get the game called off, was what Nottingham were pushing for. And then it's going all the wire. Obviously, it's like head to head. And, you know, and even under those circumstances, Neil was like, that's nothing to do with me. Do you know what I mean? Like, under that, which is literally people trying to decide what's fair.
You know, like, Neil flew in. You're right. Neil flew in on the red eye and cut one of the pipes. So, like, yeah. In fairness, the only really, well, that I can remember, really, the only one that really set it off was when we took Salters from Nottingham.
Yes. Yeah.
Because Corey was.
Yeah.
But he was best friends with Arcee. And that was the majority of it, was that he wanted to play with Arcee, and Neil stayed right out of it. And I know Corey, he went crying, and there's like, oh, they're paying him this much. I know he's under the table, this and that.
And there's a lot of, like, to be,
but
proved to be, like, his career season.
wanted to play with Arcee. That was his big thing. And yeah, we were as surprised as anyone that, but Arcee's a good guy. People want to hang out with him.
Well, he was that year, obviously.
Yeah.
Do you feel it's like the end of an era in a sense when you saw with Scott Arson retiring just there and Scott Pett's obviously just announced it? And I know from a personal perspective, that seems to be like an era of team that was like your team as well at the Clan. And I know, Woody, you've been there through the kind of eras of it, but with those kind of guys retiring, they seem to be like the last of a crowd. They were like 25 and stuff like that when all that started.
Yeah.
And now we're looking back on good careers that they've had. Do you feel that as well when you see those guys?
You don't feel young, I can tell you that. like Peter, Arcee, you know, like they've had such good careers here. And even when they had to move on, like Arcee moved on and did it with class and success in Fife. And I know they love him in Fife. Like in Sheffield as well. You know, wherever Arcee goes, he's gonna fit in. He's so popular amongst the guys. He's like a coach's dream. I mean, yeah. I don't even know if I ever coached Arcee. He just showed up and hung out and did our thing.
He just kept turning up and just get up.
Yeah, like he just put his name on the list and forget to talk to him about his contract. He was awesome. And then Pity was awesome. He was a stud all the way through too. Even when we had him in Manchester, you know, I knew it wasn't a home for him. I knew that Glasgow was still his home, but he came in and that first year here, he lit it up for us, man. He was awesome. And I knew it was a short-term thing. I knew that he wanted to be in Glasgow and whatnot. So he was great here for us. And yeah. And then, you know what, it's even cool though, because they come over and, you know, they come over single, and then the next year their girlfriends turn into their fiancés, turn into their baby mamas, and you know, and you got all these kids, and that's pretty cool, man. Like when you have all these guys that come over, and Arcee's the same way, and then now he's leaving, he's got three.
Yeah.
And you know, all these guys that come over, and it's pretty cool to see that like they get to experience that and have, you know, so they'll have like lasting memories forever and ever of Scotland, England, wherever they are. UK and the Clan and what we did, and you know, you never forget where your child was, I mean, conceived and born. But,
it's just your luck if you can get them a Scottish girl as well, like Woody, and then you've got them totally like nailed into the area. Really get them, yeah. Woody's Scottish guy now, he's the most Scottish Yorkshireman I've ever spoken to.
Aye,
you've got that sorted as well.
But yeah, it was awesome. Like Woody's testimonial, that was awesome. You know, just to see everybody there. I wish we had more time. Like it just was like we were in, you know, for me anyways, it was in and out, and it was like, oh, it was like getting to the bar for last call, you know. You know, and it was like, oh. but it was a lot of fun. It was so good to see those guys, and you know, obviously they got kids and babies and wives and you know, careers, and everybody's moved, and that's one thing, everybody that we've had has moved on into good careers, you know, every guy, whether it's firefighting or whether it's a corporate America, or every one of those guys have moved on and made that smooth transition out of hockey into the next step, and that's just, I think that's a testament to the people we brought in, you know, they're good guys, they're good people. They'll be remembered for years for sure.
So before we sort of wrap it for part one, I want to ask you about the Champions Hockey League. I dare say that would have been a big challenge for you, and seeing the team evolve even in just those four games. What do you remember about that whole experience?
Hey, Matty was my assistant coach. I remember talking to Neil, because I was like watching video, and I'm like, Neil, there's 14 coaches on these benches. Like, I'm not showing to Sweden by myself. They're just me and. And I think it was Hartman, I think, was there too. I'm like bring Matty, because that's when you had the shoulder.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to Matty, I'm like, hey, well, just play X and O's, and I'll just walk over and guess a letter, and you can look down and shake me off or write it. And people be like, oh, I'm constantly strategizing behind that bench. is it B there? No? Okay.
we were in Sweden, and he's like, every goal is like, we better not be 10, like the second one, when he's like, oh, eight more.
Yeah, Mizey scored two. He was a Cramo, remember?
Yeah, we went up. We went 1-2-0 up.
Yeah, yeah. That was like watching a NASCAR race that first game in Sweden. It was like, you're going to match lines. You're like, well, if I could ever see the back of their jerseys, it was like, yeah, but I mean, you know, we didn't have a chance. Like, and you know what? In fairness, like now our league's so much more prepared for the Champions League. Like, we were picking guys up from the airport in London. We were walking around with name tags in our own dressing room, like, still introducing each other. And, you know, and then you're going to play the Swedish Elite League champion. I think we skated once or twice together, and that was it. And we had all
even
new
the equipment. Even though we took the equipment over, when you think back, like, it was like all in the usual bags that are designed for going on coaches and stuff like that. And I can remember the person in charge of handing was trying to give you take two bags on and you take three bags on and stuff like that. Guys are carrying stuff.
We had to take our team picture like the last second because we didn't even have track suits. Otherwise, we were just taking them in like our white shirt, whatever we were, flip flops.
Our third skate was a pre-game skate in Sweden.
Yeah.
We picked routes from the airport. Like, we flew down to London, so he met us in the lounge, and he had like his hockey bag and his like massive suitcase that he was bringing over for the season. He had to traipse all that all around Sweden and Germany and bring it home.
We forgot somebody in Copenhagen Airport. It might have been Bruton.
Yeah, maybe.
He got lost. Remember, we waited around. We're like, oh, was it Bruce?
It was
somebody that we forgot. We literally just took off. And we're like, well, how the hell are we supposed to know?
Remember Bruton?
You know these guys, what they look like.
I remember Bruton sitting down at the table with you and just kind of like trying to immediately impress the new coach, just going, hey, delighted to be here. Like, good on him meeting up with the team like that. And he's like, yep, you just tell me who the guys are in the league. I'm going to go for them. And you're like, I wouldn't worry about that right now. We've got the Swedish champions to deal with. Right? So, no problem, coach. You tell me. You should be like, all those guys on that bench. Go for all those guys.
And then we went into Germany, and that was awesome. Like, I felt like we could have won that game.
Yeah.
We were so much better. It was like 4 days later, but we were so much better. Just after that, was it 10-2 or something like that?
Yeah, 10-2.
Yeah,
10-2. I remember getting off and looking at my phone between periods because Sheffield were in for Lunda. But it was like 0-0 after one, and I'm like, oh, man. And then they got beat 10-2, and I was like, I think we beat them on aggregate.
But you even said that on after the game in Ingolstadt, like when you had to do the presser. You said to me, I will beat you over there. And I think like they took it quite offensively. Like the German press were like, whoa, this is quite
a statement.
I remember statement.
It came out of my mouth, and I'm like, did I just say that? And then I'm like, wow, maybe my English, or maybe they didn't catch it. But yeah, no, yeah. Yeah, that was cool. And then even then, at the both home games was awesome. Like, it was sold out. Mm. And, like, we played really good against Gekwa. Then we beat Ingolstadt, with an empty netter. But either way, like,
okay.
We played so well against Gekwa, too. Like, we were right in that game. I mean, say what you want. When you know, a team from Scotland takes the Swedish Champions League, it doesn't care how. Where you're at, like, I mean, it went. We had chances, and Brooksy like had a breakaway and just missed, and you know, they scored a shorthanded goal, and yeah, it was a really cool experience, you know, at the time. And I think there had only been one or two teams in our league that actually were just Nottingham, I think, were the only team. So it was a fun experience, and we had a lot of fans too, which made it like they traveled. Remember, they were all partying in Ingolstadt.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome.
They're all on the beach thing down at the river.
They're all partying there. And it was just such a good group of guys. And, it's kind of sucks because the year before, there were so many guys that should have been in that Champions League game, you know. Jones, like the guys that got us there. It's just too bad we couldn't have had more of those guys with us. But that's the nature of the beast. That's what happens in this league.
Jonesy made a good joke about that in my roast. Do you remember?
I heard it,
Right, chaps, we'll pause it there. We'll be back for part two in just a minute. We've got some questions from you to ask our former coach and special guest, Ryan Finnerty. Join us in just a second. and I'm delighted to be able to bring you the first confirmed signing for the Glasgow Clan for 2020-21 season. He's a defenceman, born in Ottawa, 23 years old, and the last 3 years he's iced for the University of Ottawa in the U Sports League. He's played 93 times, scoring 20 goals and assisting with 23, that's 43 points. Anyway, his name is Medric Mercier, and as if by magic, here he is. Hello, Medric, how are you? First of all, how excited are you to be joining the Glasgow Clan?
Hey, everyone. Yeah, I'm really excited. Really excited to sign, and I really can't wait to get over in Glasgow.
Excellent. Now, what do you hope to achieve personally and professionally, you know, that you're stepping into pro hockey for the first time in your career?
Yeah, I've always wanted to play overseas, and I think with Glasgow, it's going to be a great opportunity. Just hoping to get a good first professional career under my belt and have a good season with the Clan.
So tell us about what you bring to the team. What attributes do you have that will be a big plus for the team in this new season?
Yeah, I like to think I'm a solid two-way defenseman. I like to move the puck well, and yeah, I like to contribute in both ends of the ice. I think I use my shot as a strength of mine, and yeah, I like to shoot a lot in the offensive zone. And
what do you know about the Purple Army? What do you know of Glasgow Clan when you were looking into what you were doing for next season?
Looked into it a bit, and right away, and you know, only heard great things about the organization, so I'm really excited.
And I think the connection's playing a bit of havoc here. We'll get your last one then. Have you got a message for the Purple Army watching us right now? What have you got to say to them as you look ahead to the new season?
Yeah, I just can't wait to meet everyone, meet the whole team, meet the whole Clan family. Really can't wait to get going.
This one's a 25-year-old centreman, another Canadian making the step up to professional ice hockey after spending 4 years with the University of Ottawa. He even captained them last season. Now he's coming to be a part of the Glasgow Clan. So I'm delighted to announce our second signer for the new season is Quinn O'Brien. And there he's there. Hello, Quinn. He's ready to talk to me. Good to have you on board for the new season. First of all, what would you like to say to the Purple Army?
Well, just how excited I am to come and join the team and get a taste of what Scotland's all about.
Excellent. So, tell us what you've heard about the Glasgow Clan and why it was the fit for you.
Well, first of all, I have to say I love the purple colours. But most of all, you know, I've heard only but good things about the organisation, and I'm super excited to come join it and see what it's all about in person.
So what is it you bring to the team then? Tell us about your skills and attributes that will be a part of what we'll see next season.
Well, I've always been more of a skater than I am a dangler, and I like to bring a little bit of a physical presence to the team, so I hope to continue doing that as I move forward in my career here, and especially in Scotland and in Glasgow. I hope to come and, you know, bring that physical presence with my speed and you know, really hound the other team.
So what expectations do you have of the UK Elite League? What do you know of it? What are you expecting of it?
I know it's a league that fits my style. It's a little more aggressive when it comes to other European styles. So I think it kind of fits right into that North American style a little bit more. So, you know, physical, in-your-face kind of hockey is what I'm expecting, and that's what I'm getting prepared for.
So have you been learning up on the Clan, seen some of the games on YouTube, and get a little bit of an idea about the culture of the club while you've been waiting to come over?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's been pretty exciting, actually, to watch some of these classic games.
Now, for number three, how excited are you all now? Well, I'm very excited. So let me tell you about him. The new guy, I can tell he's a 25-year-old defenseman. He's from Quebec in Canada, of course. He's 6'4", 214 pounds, so he'll be a force to be reckoned with on that blue line. He spent four full seasons with the Moncton Wildcats in the QMJHL between 2012 and 2016. He made just under 300 appearances and scored just over 100 points. Not bad. After that, he moved on to the University of Ottawa, where he's played for the GGs for 4 years, and he was an alternate captain. Over 125 appearances later, he's turning pro, and he's starting the next step of his career with the Glasgow Clan. So who is he? I can hear you holler out of your cars. Well, let's give a big Purple Army welcome to Jacob Sweeney. Now, no magical pressing of the button to reveal him to you, I'm afraid. Unfortunately, due to work commitments, Jacob wasn't available to chat to me. But rest assured, as soon as we can, we'll get him on Clan Chat Online. So keep watching for that. I'm sure you'll all give him a big welcome when you are able to see him. Welcome to part two of Clan Chat Online. Bit of a lengthy one for you this week. Jerry McLaughlin's there, Matt Haywood's there, and there's a guest of honour in the bottom right-hand corner. It is, of course, the former Clan coach, Ryan Finnerty. Right, you've been sending in your questions. I think this episode, it's actually going to be more questions from fans than there is from me. So we'll start with David Athia. Ryan, he's asking, what Clan player has impressed you the most since you left?
Like a new player, like one that you guys had in the last 3 years. Yeah. Well, that Laporte was pretty good that one night in Manchester. I like that Bajern. He's pretty good. Who else? I'm trying to think.
You hate all our players, don't you? I've just seen that in you now. You're like, I hate all those
unless
guys.
He signs them. Unless he signs them.
Yeah. Wow, good one.
Who else? I mean, oh God. Really, my memory. I'm gonna have to pull it back up here again. Who did Pete have? Who was there? Oh, Pete had my whole team.
Well, they had the Earhart.
That's right.
Yeah, Earhart.
Yeah, the other one.
Yeah, Trav's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, you guys have had some good players come through there. There's no question of that. Just obviously like that Bajerm sticks out. I thought he was pretty good. I mean, I'll stay him. Yeah, I'll say Rasmus Bajerm.
There we go.
Yeah.
Talking about, obviously,
nobody knows, man.
I'm curious, talking about players that you've signed for Manchester that you've had at the Clan, Zach Sullivan is obviously one of them. You took him to Manchester last year. He made his announcement during the Pride weekend, coming out as bisexual. And he spoke about his relationship with you and how it felt you sort of came closer together as a result of that. What do you remember of that weekend? And has it helped your relationship with Zach any, do you think?
Well, I mean, I had Zach when he was so, I mean, how old would Sully have been when we first brought him in?
19, I think. Yeah.
13, 14.
19 and probably 19 pounds heavier as well.
Yeah, he was a little chubby kid. Yeah. I was really, really hard on him in Glasgow, my first couple of years there. I mean, I was hard on him. He played a lot. He played a lot under us, but we were hard on him. And I think it was almost like, back then you could almost be hard on guys and they'd come back harder. But he was and then now him and I, like, our relationship, our coaching player relationship is really, really good. I think he's kind of grown from where he started to where he is now. I mean, he's easy to coach. But when he first came in, I mean, he had a lot of skill. He just needed to learn how to play the game. And the right way. Like, he had all the tools. We just needed to give him the right toolbox, I guess. And I was hard on him. You know, I didn't want him to get soft. And I thought, you know, and I think he got better. I think he developed under it. Like, he kind of, as much as he probably hated it, and I think he has told me how much he hated me. And then now it's kind of come. I think there's maybe more of an understanding. You know, whenever coaches are hard on players, it's not because they don't like them. You know, coaches don't talk to players they don't like. They count the days until they're gone. The coaches, when guys are hard on you, it's because there's something there. They expect more. And sometimes that's hard. As a player, you forget that it's a good thing when they're hard on you. It's a bad thing when they never talk to you.
I got a pretty funny story about it. So, you know, when he first came, he was, like, quite shy and a bit, you know, obviously super polite at that.
Like,
we were losing. Yeah, we think we were losing. I think we were 4-0 down after the first in Nottingham. And, you know, we go off behind the goal in Nottingham and Finnett walks around. So me and Sully were the last two. I don't know if you remember this, but it's, so we're walking. So we turn around to go to the room. Finn is behind us and he just yells, Sully! Sully, like, turns around and goes, are you high? Have you been smoking on the way down? And Sully's, like, really crying. bit of storms past us, and I'm trying not to laugh, but I shouldn't laugh. It looks important. But he turns to me and he goes, how can he think that? Because I've been on the bus with him the whole time.
I think I do remember that. I probably went, you.
I had to stop myself laughing before I walked through the door.
I had the bleep button on standby there, Matt, just before you sort of come up with something you shouldn't have there. That's fine.
Just the same. Yeah.
I gave the PG version.
Oh, good man. Yeah.
Poor Sully.
Right, we'll take another question from a fan. This is James Sansom, who's asking, this could be a tricky one for you, Ryan. Who does Finner rate as his greatest ever Clan signing? And how tough was it to convince guys to come to Glasgow over other EIHL top sides? And he ends up with thanking you for all you did for the club.
The greatest signing? Well, I didn't sign Matt Haywood. He was already signed, so he's out.
Easy one.
He's out, yeah. The greatest? I mean, it's kind of hard to pick one. I think the foundations were laid that first year. I think Jonesy gave us a chance to win, which I think if we didn't have Jonesy that year, it would have been ugly. Not ugly, but I don't think we would have had the year we had that very first season. Obviously, Matt Keith was a big signing. Scotty Pitt, Scotty Arson were good signings. Yeah, anytime you get guys that come in and stay for 2, 3, 4 seasons, you know, those are good signings. And then, you know, the second part of that question, like, we didn't have the greatest budgets in all the time, like my first year, and then as the crowds grew, the budgets grew, you know, so when we had that after my first year there, it wasn't too difficult recruiting to Glasgow. You know, I think there is some good buzz about what we'd done and the obviously the arena, and you know, the fans were loud and passionate. So it wasn't like, I remember talking to Keith there, and he wasn't really, I think Belfast might have been talking to him, but he wanted to come to Glasgow. I think he wanted to come to Scotland. You know, and it got easier and easier to recruit, you know, as the crowds grew and the organization grew, and you know, but we just had so many good guys come through the door. I mean, I think we lost our core after that second year. I feel like we lost some key guys that, you know, looking back, I wish we didn't. You know, I wish circumstances were different where we could have brought guys back, you know, and you know, Jones, I mean, Holtzie was great, and Holtzie was a good guy. He came in and big character, but I, you know, Jonesy at the time, we wish we could have got him back. Wish we could have got Fitzy back. I think Fitzy back then was he was such a big part for us as like our team, because he was a beast and everybody was petrified of him, and he was good in the room, and you know, and he kind of gave us that edge that I don't think we necessarily lacked in my third year there, but we definitely didn't have it. You know, we had Frankie. I mean, you can't forget Frankie. You know, and just the list as goes on. It would just be unfair to just name one guy. You know, but I think what we did have is we had multi-year guys, and then guys that kind of like bought into the whole thing, the whole Glasgow thing, the Clan thing, the Scotland thing. You know, they wanted to come back, and they had fun. You know, we let our guys have fun. I'm a big believer that teams need to have fun. You know, and I remember I've won a few championships playing. I can tell you, I don't think back now that I've been retired and go, man, I just love those Thursday practices when we did that drill. But I could tell you when we went for lunch and stayed till 8, 9 o'clock drinking beers on a Tuesday with 15, 20 guys showing up, and you know, those, like you become a team off the ice. And I don't care what anybody says, that's where you become a team. Whether it's in some guy's flat till 4 in the morning after a big weekend or whatever, like that's where players become teams. That's where teams are kind of made, not in the dressing room and on the ice. And people argue that, but I'm convinced of it. Every team I've been on that's had success has done that. And we always had a good group, and we always had good wives. We always had wives that got along, and that's a big, big part too. You know, if you get wives that don't like each other, it almost just kills the dressing room, it kills the mood, or it divides the camp a little bit, and sure makes it tough for team guys like our captains to try to organize something. and it happens more times than you think, man. It, like, there's lots of times this match girl doesn't get along with that one, and it's a nightmare. You know, what are you gonna do? As a coach, what are you gonna do? Get in there and counsel them? You know, like, it's so. Yeah, we just had that buzz about us for a while. You know, I think we lost it our fourth year. I think we just, too many guys have moved on. And, you know, I don't think I did a good enough job recruiting. And just that last year, I think we brought some good pieces in, but this wasn't enough. It was just, you know, we kind of, Heather retired and Mizey was gone. And just kind of lost that buzz. It just, you know, it was a down year, unfortunately. But so many good memories that year, and I mean, especially those two, those first 3 years, I thought were awesome for each of their own reasons.
There's one player, you know, when people talk about, sorry, Craig, when people talk about signings, they always mention like Matt Keith and Jonesy comes up regularly, and Scott Pett with him being the top all-time point scorer. The one that doesn't come up as much, but I remember the impact that it had, was Jay Rosehill, because Jay Rosehill looked like a real kind of like a real coup. To bring him into the league, and it wasn't the kind of player that we'd signed previously, and obviously he made a massive impact in the league. Do you remember that being a big impact signing as well? There were those ones.
Yeah, I mean, Rosie came in that fourth year. Where it was a lot of, I mean, it was just a tough year all around. It was a tough year. It was just a down year. It just didn't have. So I think a lot of guys. And Becca came in that year, I believe, and we still had a good team. We just couldn't, you know, was he the year before? No,
it must have been the year before, was he not?
Fourth. Yeah. Matty, you know?
No, I think he was only there for one, and then he went to Manchester and came back.
Yeah,
he came back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, when I look back, because we had such really good success my first year here in Manchester, but a lot of it was the pieces that we had in place in Glasgow the year before, right? And we just kind of shifted them a few miles down the road. So, like,
you even took the color purple with you, Finner. That's where it
got a bit, yeah. But I still think I think when you're a middle budget, upper middle budget team, I still think it's extremely hard when you lose your core to just expect the next year to hit it running, because, you know, Cardiff and those guys, they can replace like for love. Sheffield can replace like. If they lose Valorant, they'll pick up another Valorant, where we have to get really, really lucky within the budget strains, like the middle teams, the team below the top four. You can't just go handpick that. So, like, okay, he's in, we'll replace McDavid with Crosby, and, you know, we don't get that. So there always is that. You're going to have that little lull. But then if you do get the right pieces and then get them back a second year, well, then you're back. Then you can compete because you got the buy-in again. You got that swagger. And I just think that's what – when you have all this – turnover, it struggles sometimes. It's really hard on coaches to just, it just doesn't happen, no matter how great of a coach you are or great of a system. It just doesn't always just happen, you know. Can't put 50 new guys every year together and expect them just to hit the ground running. And in this league, if you know what it's like, you fall behind early, it's tough. Your crowd gets off, owners get off, and there's a lot of negativity around, and you're just trying to, like, claw your way back up to the top to you know, and It makes it tough. So, yeah, so when every time you can kind of continue, get that continuation, and then, like, you start out of the gates hot. I mean, I don't know, you guys started off hot and then went the other way, but it still, it just gives you that opportunity to succeed. And I think especially in Glasgow, with, like, the amount of fans and how passionate they are, and when you're winning, they're right behind you. When you're losing, it's like, look out. It's like you're running for presidency in the United States.
Now, you've mentioned certain things that have happened through the years, Ryan. Billy McPhillamy is asking if you've got any regrets from your time at the club. You may have answered that question already with some of the answers.
Oh, probably. I mean, yeah, you regrets every day you look back. Yeah, like, mistakes were made, of course. Yeah, tons, thousands. Like, I made way more mistakes than I made good decisions when you look back. But I think my only thing I look back on was not being able to keep that team together that we had the second year. I think if we were able to roll in with three more guys, I really think that next year we could have done something special. Because I think we were close. We didn't finish like third or something like that next year.
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
third year, like, we were in the hunt anyways, and then we finished fifth. Yeah, so I just think I just think that Champions League year. I just, you know, obviously we brought in Levy too. Like, we added so many good pieces that if we could have just brought back a couple more, I think it would have really, really made a difference, because we did add some really nice pieces. Now, saying that, if we brought those guys back, maybe we don't see Levy. I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
You're all working.
Well, imagine if we added Levy to, like, Salts and we kept Mizey and all that sort of thing. It would have been.
Yeah. Like, I look back, Salts was the only one that we lost that you can kind of put your hands up and go, because he wanted that one school program. And I couldn't bribe enough people to get him in. We tried every which way. I think we almost threatened the, and we just couldn't get him in that program. And Cardiff had it, and you know, I know he didn't want to leave. He didn't want to leave.
And a couple of years later, we got it. A different opportunity opens up. It's just timing. It's just like a few years later, literally multiple versions of that course. And you're like, mail it to when we need it.
Yeah, and that's why we're so fortunate here at the University of Salford. I mean, we had six spots, you know, that first year. We had half our team was there, and, you know, and taking all different kinds of courses, and they were so good for us. And they, you know, they tailored their program around our guys' practice schedule. And yeah, so it was really nice to have here walking into that.
I went to the University of Salford, and I never remembered the taking a register or anything where they just went McLaughlin, Manchester Storm, and like six guys say, yeah, like, that must be bonkers. Yeah, present, buddy. You owe that uni some tickets, man. Holy heck. It's great. It's great that they're invested like that. It's fantastic.
Definitely. Yeah, they're majorly invested. And then they've added a lot of programs outside of the NBA that guys have taken up as well. Like a lot of cool, unique kind of real estate, you know, international business. Like they've got a ton. Excellent. Of digital marketing now is a big one. And guys, you know, so it's not actually the MBAs all the time. Guys are actually really like specifying, like, wow, there's a full list of these. So it's a bit of a nightmare because they're all, you got five or six guys in four or five different programs. And, you know, but we just always say hockey pays a school. So hockey's first, you know.
Yeah.
If you find a curriculum that you're never going to be able to go to, sorry, it's not going to work. We're not here to tailor around. We're not an NCAA school, you know. Yeah. So that was just a big thing, is that, you know, when we do sign guys, that, you know, when you got to get the course times, because if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know, we're not. Yeah. Yeah, I hate that. I hate it when guys miss practice or had to miss practice. We just don't have that here.
Yeah.
Another question from a fan, Andy Donnelly. Now, you may have heard there's a vacancy going up here. He's asking, would you leave the door open to a Clan return? And if so, what would it take to bring you back? I think Andy would love to see you back behind the bench up here, Ryan. What would it take? Aside from currently employed, but we'll get around that.
I'll return when Haywood retires. Or I'll return on his second testimonial. I can't come for the week, though, because I'll definitely be retired. Yeah, no, you know, you never say never. You never know what'll happen. But no, we're pretty happy in Manchester with everything going on here. At this point, I'd just be happy to stand behind any bench and coach with everything going on.
There we go. Who asked that question, Craig?
That was Andy Donnelly who asked that question.
Well done, Andy. Well done, Andy. Anyone who asks a question where there's no right answer, it's always interesting to see. You did well there, Finner.
Pretty
good question.
That was a good one. One from me, actually, and just bearing in mind the question I asked earlier about which Clan player has impressed you most since you left. My question is more, which Clan player did you not work with, would you like to have had in your team, when you think of all the players the Clan have had either side of your time at the club? Is there anyone that sticks out you would have loved to have worked with?
Kristanovic.
I knew you were going to say that.
Right off the bat?
Yeah. I tried to get him. I almost had him.
Oh.
Blackie stopped it. In Sheffield, I almost had him.
Right.
The year he was, that whole debacle there.
Yeah.
Who else did you get? I mean, you guys have had some good players. I mean, obviously, like, I think Travis Earhart's a good player. Like, watching when you're coaching against him, he's dangerous. Bjorn,
yep.
It's like a race car finner, like, Bjorn.
Rusty. What do you? There's no way you call him that. What do you call him, Matty? Rusty?
Rasmus Bjerg. That's how we sound. Rasmus Bjerg.
Rasmanian devil, we call it.
There's lots of guys, but I think Kristanovic would have been, I think he had a lot to give in this league. Like, I think if he stayed, another guy like an Ed McGrain, if he would have stuck around a bit more, he would have got pretty dangerous. And you know what, we can't really not mention Ash Goldie too, like how good he was. I mean, he was just filthy good. You know what the thing about Ash, and you wouldn't know it, Ash was the worst player in the world when you played Edinburgh, all the crappy teams. And then he was just a stud when you played the top teams. And there's a lot of guys that are the opposite. You know, a lot of guys.
You used to get real mad at him for like not turning up against Edinburgh and Dundee and things like that. Yeah.
And then you play like Nottingham, Sheffield, and he's just best player in Britain. But yeah, he just kind of slept during those. Some not slept, but he had his huge games against the big teams. He was a night and day player.
Fantastic. Right, we'll start to wrap things up. But just before you go, Ryan, obviously being coach at Manchester Storm, you talked about the difficulty and what it's like to try and put a team together for a season that we don't know for sure is going to happen. Do you think we'll see a season next season?
I don't know. I mean, there's like my glass is always half full. I just, you know, I'm optimistic, but then, you know, you keep turning the news. If I'd ever turn the news on, I think, yeah, I would be, but you turn the news on and there's more talk about a second wave, and there seems to be just more talk about the virus coming back and more things potentially shutting. It makes it hard to go, yeah, we'll be back up and rinks will be full. The big thing is the social distancing and the crowds, because, you know, like you said, the league can't operate without fans. We don't have enough commercial coming in to just run off webcasts or anything like that. It just wouldn't work. You know, especially with, you know, Manchester, you guys as well. We need every fan we can get to make this work and to compete. And I don't know. I just, you know, we need a big August, big September here of positivity and hopefully. You know, and hopefully then we can maybe get some headway into going. I'm still hopeful, and you know, I think everybody wants to get going. We want to play, but at the same time, you know, it would be pointless to bring everybody here and have what happened in March and another lockdown, and you know, that would be catastrophic for a lot of teams. And you know, so I don't know. It's I'm probably leaning against. I don't think it's going to happen, but I sure hope it does.
There just seems to be too many variables before you can even consider bringing a fan into a building, let alone, you know, hundreds and thousands of them as well. And I think that's the situation faced by all clubs. But we do remain hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you can do is, you know, follow the guidelines and hope that you know, this happens, or a vaccine of some kind comes on the scene and that allows you. But even, you know, then when the vaccine, they got to deploy it, and that's going to bring a ton of that's going to divide opinions when the vaccine comes out. And yeah, so it just seems like we're just not ready to go. It just seems to be, like you said, there's just one hurdle after another after another after another. I mean, it's a nightmare getting players in on visas at the best of times. I couldn't even imagine what we'd be looking at for delays right now if we started submitting visas, and then we have Brexit, you know. Yeah.
You know, I think we'll keep that.
Is that still a thing? Is that still happening?
How important is it, Finnick, with all those things in mind, and how plausible do you think it is for all the teams to then, once we do know when we're going to have our first game back, when the first Elite League games are going to be back, whether it's going to be end of November, start of December, like has been said, or whether it ends up having to be later than that, how important is it that all the teams kind of get together and get the same message out at the same time, and like, you know, make people aware that we need to. I mean, the fans have been great around the Elite League. We know that. You see that at the playoff finals weekend. But this is the time to go out, spread the word about how good hockey is in the UK and what a fantastic environment is for the family. This is something that we could easily lose. I mean, I know football teams would be the same in lower leagues, but we need a group effort in the league. Do you think that's plausible? Can we get everyone pulling in the same direction for that purpose?
Yeah, I think I think for, you know, I think all 10 teams will be healthy and we'll get through. Like, worst case scenario, we don't play and we're back next year just to go. I think all 10 teams will be, they'll get through it. It'll be tough, but they'll get through it. But, you know, if we are fortunate enough to get going, yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to take every fan, every season ticket holder from every team to, you know, we're going to need that, you know, we're going to need that voice and dragging along buddies and coworkers and family. And because we're going to need that support to get going. You know, I a lot of people talk about, you know, if we didn't go, it'd be catastrophic. But, you know, and then I quickly am like, you know, ask them about the last global pandemic that wiped out a season. You know, what happened? Like, I think it's not like teams went bankrupt and then now are just coming back as the Phoenix, or they're coming back as a new team, right? You know, this is a global pandemic that wiped out and unemployed a lot of guys and a lot of people, and now we're all coming back. I think it'll be a celebration, I think, when we do get back. And I don't think any of our fans are going to forget about hockey. You know, I don't think the guy that comes to 20 Klein games a year is never going to come because he didn't go to a game for 6-7 months. You know, so I feel bad for the players. You know, I feel bad for the guys that need to play. I feel bad for the British boys like Maddie, like guys that are getting older that have to play. They can't just sit around for 8-9 months. And, you know, so, you know, and financially, this is what these guys do for a living. So it kind of sucks like that. But same time, you know, it'll the next year will be here. Next season will be here before you know it. And we'll be back up. And yeah, it's just such a crazy time. But I don't know if we're going to get going. I just don't know if it's going to happen. I mean, our rinks aren't even open. You know, we're not even, I think they just got pushed back again today. So it's hard to sit here and go, yeah, I think we'll be fine, you know, with everything going on. But I sure hope so. But I also don't fear if we don't go that the Elite League will drop down. And if anything, I actually think it'll give us a year to retool and, you know, and make sure that we're ready to go for 2021. And, you know, we've seen the fan base. We know that they'll support it. You know, we know that they're not just going to walk away. And I think pretty passionate fan base will be leaving. So, but yeah, here's hoping that exactly. Here's hoping that we wake up tomorrow and the R rating's all the way down. I mean, people are, there's no more people dying and no more sickness, but I don't know.
So sooner rather than later.
Let's hope so.
But I am coming to Scotland at the end of the month.
Are you coming?
If I'm allowed. I mean, am I allowed?
Yeah, I'm not. Well,
Manchester's not
in lockdown. Manchester's not in lockdown, isn't it?
Tested at the border.
Well, I mean, at the end of the month. Well, yeah.
Yeah, don't come up in a Manchester Storm branded car. What's the problem? How did you know?
How do you guys know? But no, I forget about. God, this is the thing, eh? Like, you just every day you gotta like, you literally gotta be glued to the TV to see what's going on. I mean, it's here, but yeah. Right. No, we are planning. We're gonna take a. I want to see the new house.
Oh yeah. Homework. Well, we've got to come out. You got to see Woody's new. What's it called in the garden that you built there, Woody? Bergega? What's it called? I've no idea.
Something Pergola. Like
Legoland. Pergola. Pergola.
It's fine.
Legoland would have been better.
We're just in the midst of buying a house, and Emma's been describing this thing that she wants. And of course, I'm like half in, half out. Like, oh, okay. And then it was exactly what you guys did, like with the lights and everything. And then she's like, "That's it. That's what I wanted." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "Oh, that's the thing." Oh yeah, looks good.
Don't build it yourself.
Thanks, Wade. Appreciate it.
Right, well, chaps, thank you so much for joining us on a bumper edition of Clan Chat Online. I think it's fair to say. Just to tell you about the Clan Classic happening this Saturday. It's what was Brayhead Clan against the Dundee Stars from October 2010. A certain young Mr. Haywood played in that game. Look out for that on Saturday, 7 o'clock on the YouTube channel. Don't forget to get your 50-50 tickets and your shirt off the back as well. Jerry, thanks again for joining us. As always, pleasure.
Thank you, and thanks everyone that came to the drive-in, the first drive-through event. It was absolutely fantastic. We'll definitely be doing more things like that.
What did you play? What was playing at the drive?
We played the wrong movie, apparently.
We played. Well, that's one way of looking at it. But I would say there was three signings, and you got to watch the Mighty Ducks, and you got 20% of the Mighty Ducks 2 for free.
Put your money's worth. Good stuff. Matt, yeah. Here we'll have you again next week. Have a good week.
Thanks, mate. You too.
And Ryan, thanks for joining us this week. Good to hear from you. And I dare say we'll catch up with you again soon.
As always. All right, guys. Have a good one.
Well. Okay, thanks for watching Clan Chat Online. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.